welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And hello, it's going to be a fun day today because we have a great guest in the studio, Anne McLaughlin. Welcome to Inspired Island, Anne.
Thank you, Grace.
Anne is a former psychotherapist and social worker who has provided international career counseling to help people enter or advance in international development careers. She has done extensive work coaching, training, and consulting with grassroots organizations in Asia, Africa, Central and South America, and the Middle East and North Africa, so almost every corner of the world. She has recently penned a very important book entitled World Changemaker, Build Skills in International Development and Social Work, published by McFarland Books. And I really would love to read a short book review that I found really compelling. And I quote, "There is hardly a book that offers a hands-on experience in international social work that builds knowledge-based skills for international development. Anne McLaughlin has filled a vacuum. This book offers a symbiotic interface between international social work and global development. I strongly recommend this book for anyone who longs for a well-connected, inclusive world." And that's by Brij Mohan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Former Dean, Louisiana State University. And I can't imagine such a glowing review. So we have a lot to cover today, Anne, and I'm really glad you're here. And I'd love to start with the book. Could you tell us about World Changemaker, who the book is for, and why you wrote it?
I was invited to write a book about international social work, and I knew we did not need one more book that was theoretical or topics. Because I would get so many people coming to me who would say, I want to work with child soldiers, I want to work with refugees, I want to work with human rights, but they didn't have the skills, and they were too topic specific, and that's not necessarily how the jobs happen. I was actually inspired by one person who'd come to me, and we'd done a career consult. She was social work grad. And I said, I recommend this experience in Rwanda and then Sierra Leone, because Rwanda is very much like an international development organization. It has all the departments that you might find. It has a brilliant director. And Sierra Leone is going to be much more challenging. Its director is really one of the best in Sierra Leone, but they have far fewer resources there. So you will get that experience of jumping in over your head. Mm. And I said, they're doing a brilliant job in Sierra Leone with Ebola orphans. They're finding families in Sierra Leone who will take them. They're doing a great job with that. But I want you to go there and see what they need help with, because I can guarantee you, I've been to Sierra Leone to visit them, but not since Ebola. I can guarantee you they could use help of some kind. So your job is to do the needs assessment and then program design. And that was all well and good until she got to Sierra Leone and I got panicked emails. What do I do? What do I do? And I realized I had been taught all about needs assessment, but she had not. Mm. This whole idea of needs assessment is really one of the most valuable things I found in social work. How you ask what's going on, what do you need, and that you are filling a vacuum. So no surprise my book had that same mentality. Hmm. But the book is shaped around three different things that I think usually are the obstacles to people getting a job. One, I've said to many, many people, your experience, your resume is too American. Mm. You don't know the needs on the ground. It shows it. You need to go get your hands dirty and be out in the world, in the peri-urban slums, in the remote villages, to see, one, if you can handle it. Two, you need a whole set of skills. And what the skills I cover in the book complement what I do in a career consult. There's even more skills needed. You know, this is the foundation. And last is the attitude. There's a lot been written about attitude. Curtis Keem's book, Mistaking Africa, is very popular in Africa studies classes about how we look at cultures, especially Africa. That was a launching pad for me, but attitude is even more than that. What is really needed is working as equal partners.
Mm.
So the book covers all those bases. It also, what I realized after I wrote the book, after it was published, is that these are the same steps. These are the same dance steps that we need in this country.
Mm.
These are the ways that you find your way out of a predicament, out of a challenge. They actually are many of the same ways of thinking I used as a therapist, what I call untangling a problem, finding how you find your way to the root of a problem. Many, many people coming to me will want to address the symptom of a problem. Mm. And I say, can we go further back, further back, further back, so that we really solve it? I now realize I have something to pass on.
Speaking personally, I am very dedicated to the issue of environmental justice, and I see a lot of parallels.
I've found that the people that have read it, that comment back to me, they aren't just looking for being social change agents, world change makers. They also just like it because of the stories.
Mm.
And I realized I spent a lot of time and still do a lot of time listening.
Mm.
And what the book is full of is the stories that changed me. And what readers have told me is that shone through. That changed me just to read it.
And for our listeners, are you able to tease a little bit into one of those stories that's in the book?
I think the most important story, and I'll try not to cry, was in Cameroon.
Okay.
I was out in the villages doing a needs assessment because I go all over the world to form NGO volunteer programs. NGO Abroad is not simple one-size-fits-all programs. It's really trying to understand what the challenges are, what people see as their priorities, and then plugging human talent into the challenges. So I do needs assessments absolutely everywhere.
Mm.
And we were out in the villages. I was with a Cameroonian director who works out in the villages. And it was the noonday break because it's tropical and hot. And I was talking to Luke, and he said, I don't know what I'll do. My wife is so, so sick.
Mm.
Luke, what is she sick with? Malaria. And at that moment, she came walking out of a side door. We were in the living room. The whole meeting was. She came out of a side room. She could hardly shuffle.
Hmm.
I said, Luke, surely there is something you can do. And he said, Anne, yeah, if I had $5, I could put her and I on a motorcycle taxi. And if I had another $5, we could pay at the clinic.
Hmm.
And I said, Luke, surely there is somebody in this room that has $10. Surely. And at that moment, everybody in the room looked up and looked at me.
Mm.
And I said, I see. I'm the only one in this room with $10.
Oh, God.
This is what I mean by abstract theoretical words without the story. It had never clicked for me. A subsistence farmer has food in the field. And they have the food from the harvest, but not in the lean months. They do not have cash. It's a long ways to a town from most parts of the world. It's a long walk.
Yeah.
There's not a bus. There's not a van. I really, it had not clicked. He didn't have $5.
Yeah.
It had not clicked. So that helped shape what we did. We did a lot more agricultural work in those villages. But I could see in myself this chirpy little American, surely there's a solution. Some of that, like one of the things I'd said after we were in those villages, I said, I do see how hard it is to farm when you have to walk for miles to get the water. I do see how hard it is to clear land when you don't have a chainsaw, you have a machete. I see how hard it is to farm without a shovel.
Mm.
I see how you get up at 5 every morning.
Mm.
I see that you are eating bushmeat, and this director was good enough to know I would faint when you told me what was in the pot. And she says, Anne, it's okay. We brought those spaghetti noodles for you. We knew you'd faint. So I learned a lot everywhere I went.
Mm.
But the long, long walk most people don't get until they walk it.
Yeah.
It's a long, long walk. And I've heard that in many countries and many cultures, the people that listen actually can do a pretty good job. Some people don't go to ask the question.
Yeah.
I think that's part of in the attitudes part of the book, where if you ever listen to Ernesto Ciroli's talk, I don't know if it's a TED talk or not, but it's hilarious. As an Italian aid worker, he comes into Zambia, and they think something is wrong with the Zambians who are not growing the vegetables. Because in Italy, you would have tomatoes and zucchini. You would have, it's a perfect climate. So they plant the garden, the Italian aid workers do. And he says, and then came the hippos.
Mm.
They ate the tomatoes and the zucchini. And the Italian aid workers say to the Zambians, why didn't you tell us about the hippos? And the Zambians say, you didn't ask.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
It's a whole lot of you didn't ask.
Yeah.
You've totally ignored us. You've thought you knew what was a really smart idea.
Mm.
I thought it was a really smart idea in Cameroon because they have tropical fruit falling off the trees. Mm. Literally, they don't have to cultivate it. It's all over the place.
Drops out of the sky.
Yeah, and I thought, like a liquado in Latin America, you know, if you bring this into the capital, right by the university and make liquados, just tropical fruit drinks.
Yeah.
What an enterprise. And they sort of looked at me funny. I didn't realize, how are you going to get it from the villages to the capital?
Mm.
There's motorcycle taximen. It would have been really hard to do.
Yeah. Those are really powerful stories in that sometimes, wow, well, thank you. Those are very impactful stories. And so I'd love to know a little bit about your backstory, like where you grew up, what were you like as a kid?
I grew up in Seattle.
Okay.
Which is overseas.
Yeah. Technically, yes.
That's what some would-be islanders would call it. They'd talk about going overseas. I like it a lot.
Myself. I've never heard of that. That's funny.
I'm going overseas. So I grew up in a place that was in some ways like Vashon.
Okay.
It was very stimulating. As a person, I realized there are several words that describe me then and describe me now.
Mm, okay.
I would say outdoorsy. At age 5, I wanted to be a hobo because a hobo got to sleep beneath the stars, cook their can of beans over a fire, and carry everything they needed, just, you know, in the bandana over the stick. I thought, wow, that's the life. I still like sleeping on the ground under the stars, anywhere I can.
Mm.
So outdoorsy, adventurous. A lot. Somebody accused me of being adventurous when they saw how much I bike every day. You know, they said, you're really adventurous. It's snowing and you're still biking. It's like, well, yes. And I would say very service-oriented.
Okay.
I began to see that by my teenage years. The one age I could not wait to be was 14. And that's because then you could volunteer at Children's Orthopedic Hospital. Mm. I really, really, really wanted to do that. And I realized it was a social worky thing. Mm. I realized I was a people person. And probably the coolest thing in high school was working at, we call it orthopedic, it's now called Children's, at COH camp. So here you are as a camp counselor, and on my back is the little kid that has a heart condition, so can't run, and we go down to swim at the lake, and one person, she takes off her legs, and then in the middle of the night, the kid with cerebral palsy, and I have to go to the bathroom, so into the wheelchair, down the ruddy little road to the bathroom. That was when I realized everybody had fascinating stories. Hmm. These were amazing, amazing people. I think the other place where I saw this amazing thing in my desire to be of service was in kindergarten, in Sunday school.
Okay.
I remember we were drawing pictures, all the kids gathered around this table, and I looked over, and this one kid couldn't, he wasn't drawing his grapes purple. I thought, well, that's weird, and he also wasn't drawing them inside the roundness of the grape. And I thought, well, that's weird, too. And then I looked up at the teacher, and she saw me, that I had just had this realization, this kid was blind.
Ah.
They had done such a good job that I never figured out he was blind. But you know what? I was the only one that figured it out. Nobody else did.
Wow.
So she would always ask me to go out with him to wait for his mom. And when we would be out there waiting, he would feel the fins of cars and tell you what they were.
Hmm.
He could feel Braille all over the cars. It was,
wow,
just like, this kid was amazing. I ran into him later, and he still was just as amazing. But that's when I realized adversity is usually part of the formula for incredible. But I would say adventure, my high school was the hikiest high school around because it had such a reputation for climbing.
Mm.
My very dear friend Mark had died climbing in high school, mm-hmm, rock climbing in Leavenworth, and we sort of dedicated ourselves to the mountains. So I have seen every square inch of our mountains. Mm. If you want to know the coolest places, I won't tell you. But I know it very well, and I realized I'm an adventurer. So
yeah,
that combination of adventure and service,
yeah,
is actually the tribe of people that come to me at NGO Abroad. And it's also the tribe of people that tend to want to go into international development.
Yeah.
They're very adventurous, and they also want to be of service.
Yeah, I
so
love that.
I actually realized later, I found my tribe. I was talking on a daily basis to people that we were on the same page.
That's amazing. Yeah, similar values and interests. When it came time to sort of pick a career early on, did you have your eyes set on anything specific?
I originally thought I wanted to go into teaching.
Oh, I could see that.
Because, yeah, I love learning.
Yeah.
And so I was actually accepted at a school in Boston that specialized in early childhood education, and I even got all the right scholarship money, but it really wasn't quite enough, and so I was just agonizing it. But my father sat me down and goes, Anne Marie, I know you really would like to go here, but you know what? I really know how much you like the mountains, and we don't have the money to send you to Boston so you can see that they don't. You know, just for a look-see.
I can attest.
But I think you would actually be much happier here. And I listened to him, and actually a very dear friend and I went up to Fairhaven Western. I thought, I'm very self-propelled.
Mm.
I thought that would be great. It was kind of, but I also need X amount of structure. So eventually, though, I'd explored and adventured everything that needed exploring in Bellingham, and transferred to the UW. I came down to the UW, and so I was in education at Western, its specialty. And the first assignment in the class was go just watch a classroom. That was a great assignment because, you know what I realized? I don't set limits very well. The kids would be springing from the rafters. I wouldn't be good at it.
Mm.
So I have to pick another people field. So I was looking into the helping professions, people work. I came down to the UW and I talked to psychiatry, psychology, psychiatric nursing, and social work.
Oh, okay.
I could have talked to Ed Psych, but I didn't know it existed. So, but it was actually the psychology department advisor who was persuasive.
Hmm.
He literally took me out of the building and took me by the shoulders and pointed me at the School of Social Work that you could see across the lawns. He said, if you want to learn how to counsel, you go over there to the School of Social Work. Over here, we run rats through mazes. We're really good at research. The reality is social work looks at all the layers of the onion, individual, couples, family, community, national policy, advocacy, international. And after a while, you see those common patterns and the skills that radiate.
Yeah.
Social work is also much more rabble-rousing. It has a very proud history in the U.S. Jane Addams, we all get tested on her. Rabble-rousing in the progressive era, starting Hull's House in Chicago with the Greek and Italian immigrants. It is a field that has the potential to rock. It served me well for 20 years as a therapist. I would have PhD psychologists say, I wish I had learned to counsel like you guys and learned how to test people. You know, very good at the MMPI and there are certainly many psychologists who are excellent therapists, but I had many people come to me and say, I was just looking for those letters after the name, MSW. I'll say how I made that next step into international because it was so much a social worky thing.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I wanted to transition from domestic work to international, because I could see the needs there.
Hmm.
I remember after one staff meeting coming out, we were yapping, you know, at the break, and I said, here we are yapping about apples and oranges, and there are people that don't have apples and oranges. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me. So I took years and years and years. Well, actually, I thought the first place I would get international experience was the Peace Corps.
Okay.
And a very, very dear friend of mine had been in the Peace Corps, and I said, what do you think of the idea? And he wouldn't answer. He said, how about you and I and Scott sit down and have dinner together? Okay. And that's when he said, the Peace Corps is a branch of the State Department. He said he had majored in Spanish, but the Peace Corps put him in Belize. And he said, they put me in Belize to keep an eye on what was going on in Nicaragua and El Salvador. They weren't really thinking we're going to help the people in Belize. And the fact is, so I said, so what would you recommend? Both of them said American Friends Service Committee. They do amazing work all over the world, the best. So I wrote to AFSC. I'd had a friend of mine in junior high and early high school had introduced me to Quakerism. That rang true for me. And they said, you know what? You bring amazing experience to us. We would love to have you in Cambodia working with people who've experienced the genocide. We would love to have you in Guatemala, kids who've seen their parents macheted in the Civil War. Would you consider either of those? I said, I'd be totally honored. But then their next question was, But what we really want to know is we find it enriches our programming so much. If you would tell us what you would do. I said, I am such a social worker. I have to do a whole needs assessment. And the reason one of the reasons I had to do it that way was the only time in therapy I would make a major blunder is if I had missed something at the outset.
Mm.
If I had not asked, and the usual thing I missed, I wouldn't ask about drugs and alcohol. And that's what may have been jamming up the marriage. It was totally a secret. There was something, but intuitively I could often tell when there was a missing puzzle piece. But so I wasn't going to embark on a whole new direction without being thorough at the first step. Because otherwise I'd be down this narrow tunnel and it's like not knowing what's going on over here. So I was very, very thorough. I spent years and years and years doing my needs assessment.
Really?
It's why I'm actually so good at the career counseling, because I know every discipline. I know every country. I know its history. I know its culture. I was going to get a PhD doing all that independent study, but 10 out of 10 of the dearest people to me said, don't do that. That's going to cut you off from the people you serve. So I didn't. I threw it all out. You know, I didn't get credit for it, yeah. But it really shaped how I did things. It shaped how I saw the challenges.
Yeah.
And by the end of all that, I said, oh man, there are so many challenges. That's why I kept feeling claustrophobic. I did not want to be in one place. I wanted to be a multiplier effect. I wanted to create other change makers.
Yeah.
And I still want that. That's part of what this book is.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing it a little bit teaspoon by teaspoon individually because that was my orientation as a therapist. And my older sister, who's an MBA, she said, Anne, you're going to exhaust yourself doing this individual by individual. And I will say she's right. I've totally exhausted myself not doing a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm at the point where I really want to move mountains, not teaspoon by teaspoon, but more of a bulldozer.
And I think this conversation brings us squarely into a big chapter of your life, which has been NGO Abroad that you work with. And could you talk a little bit about the history and what NGO Abroad aims to do?
NGO Abroad, as I said, is what I think of as the connecting rod between humanity's challenges and human talent and solutions. So I'm continually growing what we offer. It's twofold. It has placements of all kinds in many, many disciplines in many, many parts of the world. Those placements were initially and continue to be shaped by what I see the needs to be. So it has placements in almost every discipline you can imagine. So it's not just a social worky thing. That could be water, that could be public health, that could be medicine, that could be nursing, that could be education, that could be environmental, that could be engineering. It could be the trades.
Mm.
It could be, I don't think I've left too many people in the world out. In other words, anybody could come to me and say, how can I help? Sometimes people come with what I call a mismatch, where their skill is not especially pertinent in that culture.
Mm.
So that needs to be rectified a bit. So placements of all kinds that I think are rewarding to the person volunteering or interning, but more importantly, they're of some benefit to the people at the other end.
Mm.
So international placements are part of it, and the other part is the consulting, the on-the-ground discussion I'm continually having with my colleagues all over the world. I've got two books in the making that are springboards from World Changemaker. because I was naive enough not to know how long a book should be. I just kept rolling it. It was COVID. It was lockdown. I just kept going and going and going. But the next book is The Solutions.
Okay.
That are made in the Global South. Hey, I want you guys to know these folks have thought of this. One, to dispel this whole sense of, you guys don't know how to do this. Oh, no, no, no. Look at this and this. And also to be a boilerplate for people. This public health program, look at what they did. If you are at a loss for ideas, just transplant this. Now, that's ironic because here I am making all these recipe books, basically, instructions. I hate instructions. I never follow recipes. I would never make anything from IKEA. I can't do it. I could make it from scratch. I could invent it, but I can't take somebody else's and follow it. So here I am making all these instruction books. But the book that I'm really most passionate about, I had this conversation in Nairobi with the director. He and I had been communicating from afar. I thought he really was all about peace building after the election violence. When I got there, we had a long, long conversation about what life was like under Moy, what it was like in prison, how all the human rights activists got together and said, we need to rewrite the Constitution and devolve power from the Capitol. We need people having much more power. So the third book is much more what I call democracy building, because if you have somebody at the top that really doesn't care about the people, skims all the money off the top, you're in trouble. The development goals are all out the window. And really a huge part of good development is not just building programs, it's building people, giving them a voice. And actually a lot of people would like to have a voice. And I think it's going to get really noisy really soon. I mean, people have a megaphone. People are out in the streets in every country, you know. So I do a lot of consulting informally, more than formally. And with the closer it is to the ground, the happier I am. The more I sleep on the ground, the happier. I like on the ground.
Yes. And I mean, clearly I could see in that example your skills as a therapist coming to light and how you approach these relationships that you build through NGO Abroad. That's really cool. So obviously, Anne, your heart and mind is spread all around the world in many, many different communities, but yet you've chosen Vashon as the place to be your home base. So I'd love to know the story behind how Vashon came on your radar and why you decided to move here.
Vashon wasn't on my radar for a long, long time. When I was a kid, we would go to Woodby or Bainbridge. We'd go north. West Seattle was the other side of the moon. As a kid, though, I did come to Camp Sea Elf, and I still remember sleeping on the ground and looking up through the trees. I just loved it. I love the part of Vashon that's mossy, mapley, ferny. So in college, after I'd done a lot of bike touring in many, many parts of North America, we came biking to Vashon, as if it was a bike tour. We didn't know. I think it was actually before you could camp at the hostel. So we come over all rigged out to stay overnight. And when you're got that much gear, you go a bit slower. We camped overnight at the high school, just like if we were on bike touring when you camp at a graveyard because there's no other spot to camp. It was part of an adventure. I really actually fell in love with Vashon on that trip. It was, I didn't so much contact the people then as just fell in love with the island.
Yeah.
And it was when I had been out of Washington and different states in other parts of the country and came back, I applied for a job at University of Puget Sound and got it. And I remember asking someone, I know who it was. I think her name was Rosabeth Gibson.
Okay.
She just happened to be from Vashon, so I was lucky I asked the right person. I said, how far is it to the ferry from UPS? She said, deet, 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 deet. And so I went down and scoped out Point Defiance Ferry. And that's when I said, you know what? If they offer me this job, I'm going to live on Vashon. Not in Tacoma. I'm going to live on Vashon. So I did.
Wow.
It was... I have to say, I really love Vashon. I welcome anybody that wants to come and live here. I'm not xenophobic, but I'm very protective. They have to... My sister lived in New York a while and then returned to the Northwest. She actually makes people sign a pledge. You have to take care of the place. You have to love this place as much as I love this place.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Actually, what I find is a lot of people that have come here from other spots are major contributors, are major, major community movers and shakers. And that's true for immigrants and refugees all over. You know, they bring something. And that's what I want to see. I want to see this place kept as amazing and as beautiful as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you for that. And you mentioned you have two more books on the horizon, but anything else that you're really inspired by these days?
I want to move mountains, not teaspoon by teaspoon. So more speaking, more teaching, more training, more how you actually have the conversation in a bigger way. We'll take a look. I like steep learning curves. This will be a very steep learning curve because once I do something, I'm doing it sort of intently. And that's where I was concerned about that tunnel vision thing. You get into it, you're in it, and then you pull your head out and go, oh, I'm doing it by teaspoon. Maybe I could do it differently.
Mm.
So I would like to figure out the ways that a lot more people... What I really want to see is a revolution. And I don't mean a rowdy, tear-it-all-down revolution. What I want to see is a change in thinking from negative to positive. Most people know what they don't want. And the news is all about the problem. I want to see a revolution, and we begin to shift our focus to... what is it you are trying to build?
Mm.
How do you build it? It is a shift in really building a future. That's why, I mean, with the publisher, we, you know, went in circles of the title of the book. The operative words are build and skills. And I want for people, it's really not rocket science. As I said, people in the trades do this day in and day out. I take my car to Mike at Doug's Auto. Can you fix it? I'll have it ready tomorrow. And it's partly because we have not had an orientation to actually building and fixing. Mm-hmm. It was actually rebuilding my house when I got that understanding of building. This is not rocket science. You start at the foundation and then you build up. But a lot of what happens, I think, academically is you get things thrown at you and you don't see the pattern, you don't see the rhyme or reason, you don't see the structure. And so I think we can do a better job. I would like to be able to help with that. Because I finally see it. I see that pattern.
Yeah. Beautiful. Awesome. Well, that's really exciting. And it's and it's so applicable to so many issues and things facing our community and world collectively. So, yeah, thank you for all that work that you're doing. And Anne, I believe you know, but we like to end every interview with a more fun lightning round of questions. So are you game?
I am.
All right. So the first question is, so the Seattle area is known for good beverages, coffee, tea, beer, wine. Do you have a favorite beverage on Vashon?
It was Wax Orchard's
apple berry cider. They aren't around anymore, but that was the best thing ever made here.
Oh my goodness, I hadn't heard of that, but it sounds right up my alley. And if you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island? Or like, do you have any favorite parts of the island?
It's not so much a part as many people on this island know that I'm biking or kayaking.
Yeah.
Okay. And they will say that. I see you biking all the time.
Yep. Honk when you go by or pull over and we'll talk.
Awesome.
And people do.
That's great. That's a great way to see the community through biking. And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
When the county road crew cuts the blackberries.
Oh, yeah.
They've actually improved this year. They waited till the berries were almost over before they cut.
Okay.
So, yay. I'm so happy. This year we had blackberries. I mean, in years recently, they were cutting 15 feet back. I had the conversation with them and the supervisor, and that's the county right away, and they have every right. I was watching people come out of their house screaming, hey, that's my blackberries, that's 15 feet back, you can't touch them. And it seems like we found a solution to that.
Good, good. We don't want to get rid of those delicious vashon blackberries.
But because I bike all over, I mean, I know the blackberries all over the island and where the patches are.
Yeah, you have a front row view to all of them.
Yeah.
And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
Watching the sunset.
Ooh, that's a good one. This time of year, they are extra pretty, it seems, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, beautiful. And lastly, this is an important one for you, is where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Websites, NGO, which stands for non-government organization, ngoabroad.com is where you find that work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you scroll down to the pink button, the link there will take you to the book World Changemaker, and to my other website, which is annmcl.com. This is because most people can't spell McLaughlin, so they never would have found me. So it's annmcl.com. That really is a aspirational site that is already laying the framework for the work I will be doing.
Okay.
It's not a has-been website. It's a wannabe website of these are all the things. I have found that websites help me tell the world. I've envisioned this. Now here it's coming and coming and here's this and this. So
yeah.
Both in the coming years, I will be doing both NGO Abroad and much more of the things that are on AMNMCO.com.
Awesome. It's ever evolving. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Anne. This has been great.
Grace, I thank you for doing this. You are one of the contributors and change makers here.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you for doing it.
And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on KVSH LP Vashon, your island connection streaming online at voiceofvashon.org. Until next time, stay inspired.